Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. You're on with Financial Fitness with Derek T. Billups Sr. Good evening. This is the end of the summer. So what we're going to do here with Financial Fitness with Derek T. Billups Sr. is we're going to do a review. A review of some of the summer shows that we have, some of the people that we had in earlier, some of the guests we had, some of the conversations we talked about. So I think that's important to do, just to kind of recap, review some of the people. We had Josh Buckner in from Better Quality Credit Repair. We had Mr. Robert Farmer in earlier, mortgage lender. So we had a few people in, a few professionals in that helped us through and got us some information and helped us with a lot of the information. And again, I keep repeating myself because I think it's important for you to know that what we're doing here on Financial Fitness with Derek T. Billups Sr. is to make sure that we bring in other professionals, that team I'm always talking about, financial advisors, mortgage lenders, credit specialists, CPAs, accountants, lawyers, life insurance agents, bankers, people of that nature, professionals of that nature, that can just give you some serious, serious information that help you through it. And now that the summer's over, we have the last quarter of the year. Well, it's not quite the last quarter, but after September, it'll be the last quarter. And what we're going to do is we're just going to, this last quarter, as we go into it, we're going to try to make sure that you have a great understanding with a lot of those professionals. Because if we get, remember, I'm on every Sunday evening from 8 to 10. Tonight, I'm doing 8 to 9 because I know it's a holiday. But for the most part, we're going to be doing 8 to 10, and at least twice a month, we're going to have some professionals on. So we're very excited about the things that we've been doing, the things that we're going to do in the future, because we believe that as we continue to move forward, we're going to help a lot of people. A lot of people are going to get the information that they need, hopefully apply it to their lives. And if for some reason they don't quite need that information themselves, they'll pass it on. If they don't have time to pass it on, they can refer them to our show. And hopefully by referring them to our show on Sunday evenings, they'll get a lot of information that they can themselves apply. Again, I'm Derek T. Billups Sr., president of the Foundation for Financial Fitness Incorporated, author of the new book, Are You Making a Living or Making a Life? My first book was Changing Your Condition, Not Your Position. You can get both of those books on my website at www.f4ff.net. Of course, you can also go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, online if you'd like to get the books as a Kindle or anything like that. You can obviously get the book that way as well, but you can also go on my website, or you can email me at financialfitness@f4ff.net. Of course, you can call me at area code 856-577-2903. Again, we're going to get started because we have a short show today, just a one-hour show, again, because it's the holiday weekend. We want to try to get some information in. Make sure we keep everybody moving, keep you in the spirit, keep you in the flow of my show. And then what we're going to do is we're going to come back strong and hard next Sunday, which will be September the 11th. So we're going to come back next Sunday strong and very hard. Also, I just want to mention, in October, we're going to start our Financial Fitness Challenge again. So we're going to start right in the first weekend, the first Sunday of October, we're going to start our Financial Fitness Challenge. I'll give you more information on the challenge works, how you can participate, how you can get other people to participate. You'll see information on my website. You'll see information on Facebook, Instagram, all of those things. And so that Twitter, so that you'll get a better understanding of what we're doing. You can follow us, keep on pace. And then hopefully, just in case you miss a Sunday as we start the challenge, you can still jump in, find out where we are, keep up, and then join us as you get time to do that. Again, you're on Financial Fitness with Derek T. Billups Sr. on the Poets Without Limits radio. Now, right now, we're going to spend the first 10 minutes or the next 10 minutes of the show, talking about college planning. And this is dear to my heart. I've had the opportunity to send 3 kids to school, and as a former teacher, former educator, I love working with kids. I was also a site supervisor for the SAT programming and providing SAT services and things of that nature for kids. So I've had an opportunity to work with a lot of students and their parents and preparing them to go to school and go to college. And this is a great time now, particularly if you're a senior. If you're a senior now and school's starting Tuesday probably, and you're getting ready to go to school and getting ready to go to high school, you're senior in high school, that is, and now you and your parents are really trying to narrow down the school that you guys want to go to or you want to go to. And I think it's important that you start to look at a few things. And one of the first things is understanding how you apply, when you apply, and who you apply to. And I always like to tell the young men and women that I'm talking to, as well as their parents, apply only to the schools initially that you're interested in. And you should have about 10 schools. Now, we can get more involved in it as you go along, and if for some reason you don't know or have an understanding of that, you can contact me or you can contact other professionals that can help you with it. So I'm going to be giving you some general information. But this information I know you can use and I know you can apply. Again, first and foremost, applying to schools that you have an interest in, a real interest in. And you try to narrow down to maybe 10 schools, get those 10 schools, and we'll talk about why you pick those schools, the reason you pick those schools. And only you and your parents will know that, but why do you pick those schools or choose those 10 schools, and then you start to apply to those schools, completing the application to those schools early. Okay, making sure that you complete all the information on the application, looking for waivers. Okay, completing applications at fairs and schools when available. Let's go back to that. Because first I said applying to schools, and I said completing the application early. What do I mean? I mean early. Early means early, before that deadline. And usually if you can start completing applications, submitting applications in November, a lot of schools call that early application period, and once they get their early applications, they start giving what you call early admissions. And a lot of times it puts you ahead of the game if you apply early. So if you start getting those applications in November, start getting them in and doing that, then you have a leg up on everyone. Not only do you have a leg up in terms of maybe getting accepted, but then you start having a leg up on areas in terms of getting scholarships and grants and things of that nature, opportunities that they have to offer at that particular school, or at a specific school, what they have to offer that will then allow you to be in line first. Be in line for some of those scholarships, grants, things of that nature that they offer. Now that you have early admissions, you complete the application early, you get admitted early, now you have an opportunity to be in line early for those grants and all those little things that they have available from those schools. So we want to make sure of that. Completing all the information on the application. That means completing everything. So if it doesn't apply to you, then you put the not applied or not applicable in A, but you make sure you complete it. What's so important about completing the whole application and not leaving anything blank? Because the more you leave blank, now if I'm at the school and I'm working in the admissions office and I get an application that's incomplete, the first thing I'm going to do probably, depending on how much information is incomplete, I'm going to send an application back. Now, if I send an application back, then that means my time is not spent on the application, it's spent on someone else. Now, maybe if you have one or two questions incomplete, maybe as one of the people that are reviewing the application in the admissions office, maybe I may call and ask you for that information to help expedite. But if for some reason there's multiple questions unanswered or incomplete, I may very well send that application back to you to have you complete those questions and then send it back to me, which that could take a week or two. So we want to make sure all the information on the application is complete. That way, that admissions officer, that admissions counselor can take the information, look at the application, and then help make that decision made as quickly as possible. Waivers. Most applications, if not all applications, there's a fee to it. So if there's a fee, you have to try to find a way to avoid that fee. So if assume that the application fee is $25, $50, and you're applying to 10 schools, that could be as much as $250, as less as $250, or as much as $500. It's a lot of money. So what we want to do is try to make sure, how do we manage that? How do we put ourselves in a position so that as things are going along, that what we'll do is we'll get some of those waivers. And this is how you can offset some of those waivers or get around those waivers, or in layman's terms, not pay those waivers. Sometimes when you go to college fairs, things of that nature, a lot of schools have them, organizations have them. Sometimes things like the YMCA, the church may have them. Anytime you see a fair or something that brings a number of colleges together, go to it. Because a lot of times when they do that, they will waive the application fee. So anytime you see a fair, a college fair, or anything of that nature happening in your community or surrounding communities, attend it. Because even if it doesn't have any of your schools that you're interested in, still attend it. Because if you attend them, then you may be able to get some waivers. And as you get those waivers, then you're able now to have those applications put forth. You have those applications put forth. Now it's early application, and then hopefully early admission, and then early in line for all of those scholarships and grants and things that those schools may offer for you. Then you start talking about strategies for paying for school. And first and foremost, we're talking about that FAFSA form. But you've got to get your parents to complete those tax returns early. ASAP, January gets in. As soon as you get all your W-2s and all the information you need to complete your taxes, get it done as soon as possible. That also helps with the early acceptance to school. Also, the early application. Because the early application for financial aid. Because, again, you're approved first, you get accepted, you're there. Now the process starts. You're in line first. All the financial aid, all the scholarships, all the grants, all the things they have to offer. And then they're more willing also to let you know what's happening. Now you see it. You're already approved for the school. You've already been accepted to the school. Now you can start to move forward in trying to receive some of those other things that they have to offer for each and every student that comes in. Again, as I mentioned, apply for everything. I don't think I use the word apply. I just say that you would then be available. You would be in line for the grants and scholarships. But most importantly, you have to apply for them. So if I neglected to say that's what you need to do. You need to make sure that you're applying for all of those grants and scholarships. And also you have the ability to negotiate with school. That's a major point, being able to negotiate with school. Now, some people talk about, what does that mean? What that means, just what negotiating means, is there's a give and take on both parts. A lot of times at school, once you're there, you have something to offer, you're bringing something to school, whether you be an athlete, whether you're academically, whether you're a band member, whether you're just a high scholarship, scholar person, and not just a scholar athlete, but they want you there. And what happens then with that is what you need to do then is be able to say to them, you're in a position because you want to go to another school, you've been accepted to other schools, but you really want to go there. What else can they do for you to make life easier for you while you're there? That's the negotiator. And that's what we want you to make sure that you understand, that you can do that as you move forward. So continue to do that. Now what do we want to do? Okay? Now as we're looking to that, we want to understand the process. There's almost 500 million, over 50 million, I'm sorry, 50 million students in the U.S. to go to school. 50 million. That's a lot of students. Seems like 500, but 50 million students that go to college in the U.S. Do you know the difference between public and private schools, in-state or out-of-state schools? Okay? What's the income in your financial status? We talked about the application processing and the timing and financial aid eligibility. Let's start with the financial aid eligibility, meaning what will you be eligible for? Meaning on one hand, what's the responsibility of your parents? And what will they have to pay financially? And what you're eligible to receive? Whether it be from the school, the federal government, the state, wherever, what kind of financial aid are you eligible to receive? And what is the ultimate responsibility of your parents? Those two things come together. When they come together, they then equal what it is and how you're going to pay for your school. That's what we want to make sure. And then we talk about the application process. Early. Tommy, get it in early, get it in, do the things you need to do. Your income and financial status. Again, that goes right back in understanding the financial aid eligibility, but your income, your parents' income, as well as your financial status or their financial status. Where are you? What's the difference between an in-state and an out-of-state school? How does that apply to you, in-state, out-of-state? Then we understand if you live in New Jersey or if you still live in New York or if you live in Maryland. You understand if you live in Maryland, then if you go to school in Maryland, that's an in-state school. Well, what happens if you live in Maryland and you want to go to school in Pennsylvania? Or if you live in Pennsylvania and you want to go to school in Colorado? If you live in California, you want to go to school in Mississippi? What happens? What are the changes? What is the difference? How does that affect you financially? Does it affect you financially? Does it change anything? Then you have, what is the difference between a public and a private school? So I got a public, private school, in-state, out-of-state. Let's discuss those. Because if I'm at a public school or a private school, here's the difference. A public school is usually run by a specific state. That's a public school. is usually run by a specific state. A lot of their funding comes from the state. A lot also comes from the federal government. But it is run by the state. It is funded by, when I say run, it is funded by the state. And it is usually there, and it gives it to residents of that state. So if you live in New Jersey and there are state institutions in New Jersey, then it is a great benefit to those students who reside in the state of New Jersey if they want to go. There's a discount, you might say, discount in tuition for those who reside in New Jersey. However, someone resides in Pennsylvania and wants to come to that school in New Jersey, then the cost would probably be different. And not probably, it is usually very much different. It could be anywhere from 20 to 25% different in terms of tuition for a student that comes from out of state, let's say comes from Pennsylvania, to go to school in New Jersey if the school is in New Jersey. So they either get into a public or private. Now that's a public school. But now you're talking about a private school. Usually a private school is usually funded by alumni, endowment, money given, tuition. And because it's so much funded by the tuition, what happens is there is no difference in position and tuition. So again, let's go back to Pennsylvania. If it's a private school in Pennsylvania, the tuition for a resident of Pennsylvania will be no different for a resident of New Jersey who's traveling to Pennsylvania to go to that private school. So the private school tuition is not, there's no difference. It's the same for everyone going to that school, regardless of where you come from, regardless of where that private school is located, meaning what state it's located in, and regardless of where the students are coming from. Usually the reason behind that is because the funding to run that school comes from tuition, private donations, endowments, and some comes from maybe the state and or federal government based on the demographics of the population of school, meaning women, men, minorities, things of that nature, helps with the sometimes with the funding from the federal government to help them offset some of their costs. But the majority, I would probably say 80% of their income comes from tuition, endowments, and donations from alumni and things of that nature. So then you got a public and private. So if the private school costs $30,000 a year and you want to go to that private school in New Jersey and you're from Pennsylvania, it's going to cost you $30,000. If I live in New Jersey and I want to go to that same school, it's going to cost me $30,000. Now, if that public school in New Jersey, the tuition may be, for me, because I live in New Jersey, may be $20,000. But because you are a non-resident and you're coming from Pennsylvania, it may cost you $25,000. So the tuition is different for in-state students than it is for out-of-state students, for public institutions and for private institutions. They're usually the same. So that's important to know. In-state, out-of-state. Just talked about in-state, out-of-state. That's what happens particularly, and that's mainly the issue in-state, out-of-state for public institutions. But here's the thing with in-state, out-of-state. When you leave the state, you know, they may incur a lot more expenses because you're leaving the state. Now, you may be living in one part of the state and want to go to a school in another part of the state. That could be just as far as going to another state, which could be right across a bridge or something, which could be 20, 25 miles away, which you may want to go to a school in your state that could be 5 or 6 hours away. So the distance may not necessarily be the same. Yes, if you live in Pennsylvania, you want to go to school in California, that's a big difference. Yes, if you live in California and you want to go to school in Miami, Florida, yes, that's a big difference. But if you live in Delaware and you want to go to school in New Jersey, chances are it may not be but 2 or 3 hours, depending on what part of New Jersey you want to go to. Or if you live in Delaware and you want to go to school in Pennsylvania, depending on where the school is in Pennsylvania, it may not be a far travel. But if you live in Delaware and you want to go to school in Georgia, we know it's going to be, regardless of where it is, we know it's going to be a 10 to 15-hour drive. So that's the difference between in-state, out-of-state, public, and private. What I want to do right now is I want to take a short break. You're on with Financial Fitness with Derek T. Billups Sr., the Poets Without Limits Radio.
Hello. My name is Derek T. Billups Sr., President of the Foundation for Financial Fitness Incorporated, a New Jersey.
down his life for me. Took the pain and agony. That's what it cost, just to set me free. It was meant for me, and he did it for me.
Over the summer, and we may not get through all of them today, But we just want to make sure that all our listeners understand that as we move forward, those are the type of things that we're going to be talking about. We're going to continue to talk about college. I'm a big believer in this. And so probably once a month, we're going to have a topic on this, and we're going to talk about college planning for our young students and parents who have no idea what to do in helping their kids go to school. So we're going to definitely do that, okay? So as we move forward with that, we're going to continue to move with that. Then we're going to move on as we talk about mortgage lending, and we had a great guest with Robert Farmer. Then we talked, had a credit repair specialist. So I have a couple credit repair specialists, but I had a gentleman by the name of Josh Buckter. He was here. So, you know, I'm just going to be really excited about some of the things we're going to be doing for the last quarter of the year and some of the guests we're going to have. And, again, you know, we talked about budgeting, the whole financial planning issue, just setting goals, financial goals, just a plethora of things we had talked about that we believe that's going to help you during the course of the end of the year and get your new year started off for 2017. So let's try to finish up here on this college planning thing. Let's get to the preparing for college, you know, your course selection, standardized test, which is meaning the ACT and the SAT, parent and guidance counselor discussions, reviewing the college application process, and general and informal decisions. And when we talk about general and informal decisions, general and informal decisions really is no more than saying, okay, this is where we really want to go, and this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to get there. And I think that that's what the general and the informal decisions really it's all about. It's, okay, this is the school I want to go to. We made that, let's get going. Let's start the process of really making sure this thing is going to allow us to get in school, and we've got our FAFSA, we got everything moving, and we're going to make that decision. But you also want to understand is, you know, parent and guidance, this year is a big topic, parent and guidance counselor discussion. Make sure that you have your parents discuss with the guidance counselor the resource and take advantage. More important, review and talk to them about the resources that they have. Most counselors have been in that job for years, particularly the senior counselors, and they have a lot of resources. I'm sure that they've helped many of kids go to school, helping them with the SAT and ACT testing, helping them with the application process, helping them find waivers, helping them understand how to pick courses, as well as having direct relationships with admissions counselors in particular schools. And maybe the schools may be one of the ones you want to attend. So it's important to build a rapport and relationship with your counselors. Don't wait until your senior year to start talking to your counselors about what your goals are and what you want to do. I would do that in your junior year. I mean, you could do it before, but I would really get really in depth with your counselor, because usually what happens with counselors, they move with the kids. So if they're your junior counselor, they're your junior counselor this year, they'll probably be your senior counselor the following year. So communicate with them, talk with them, have your parents come in. Let them know and let your parents know that it's important for them to discuss with them what's happening and what you want and what your goals are. And let the counselors know that you're serious. And I think that that's important as well, that you're very serious about what's going to happen and how it's going to happen. Those standardized tests, understanding what they are, how they work, and, you know, how often you should take them. And I think that one of the things we want to do is to make sure that you at least take them. I would begin taking them, and I would suggest that you begin taking them in your junior year. Some people take them in their sophomore year, but I would definitely make sure I'm taking them 2 to 3 times in your junior year, 10th, 11th grade. And then if you like the scores, you keep the scores. Remember, you can always, you know, mismatch the scores. You don't have to keep, if your math score is not as well, if your written score is not as well, if your reading score is not as well, each time you take them, you can keep the better math score from one test, and then you can take the reading score from another test, and your written one, your essay from another one. So you can do that. And sometimes you're going to do better on a test. Your first time you take it, one area of the test you may do well. The next time you take it, you may improve. And that's the reason why you want to take it multiple times, because you get more comfortable with those tests. You understand better. You understand what to eat, what time to get up, how to prepare yourself, which is also a process. More and more schools now are not even requiring the standardized tests. But the ones that you want to go through, you need to find out if they are. If they are, you need to be prepared. You need to know that early. Again, you need to know about that early, okay? So we want to make sure that you understand that. Get the process, apply early. Talk with your counselors. Get your standardized test if your school is needed. Get the FAFSA and everything completed. Negotiate with schools. Get all those things in. If you're ready to go to school and your kid is a senior, make sure that they apply early. Make sure they apply early in November. Make sure you find out if there are college fairs and things of that nature going on in your area. Make sure you get your child to those things, because that's how they can get waivers. Sometimes even if you complete the application online, you can get waivers, okay? And a lot of schools are going to complete applications online, okay? So make sure you do those things so you're preparing your kid to go to school and you're making sure that you have a better understanding. If you have any questions, again, you can always reach me, financialfitness@f4ff.net, or you can contact me at area code 856-577-2903. Let's move now to another topic that we have been talking about. We had talked about with Josh about credit repair, okay? And I'm going to move through this quickly because, again, we don't have a lot of time, and I just wanted to do a quick overview of a couple, not everything we talked about, just a few of the topics that we had discussed during this past summer. Okay, we did a lot in August and early July, and we did quite a few shows, or all the shows in August, and then we did a few in July. So one of the things we talked about is what is a credit report, and what does it show? And it shows things like your personal information, negative information, your payment history, and inquiries. We talked about it. Josh helped us to understand what was inquiries. Inquiries is something that every time you go to apply for a credit card or some kind of a credit, whether it be a car loan, whether it be a home, whether it be an actual credit card, they're all called inquiries. That's what you call inquiry. And every time you do an inquiry, whether you get accepted or get approved for that credit or not, it takes a few points off your credit score. So always remember that. So don't be doing a bunch of inquiries unless you absolutely have to. Okay? Payment history. We know what history is. I talked to Josh about this, and I'm thinking that history, what I always say, history is like, I'll give you this great example, is the payment history is like when you're in school. You know, when you're in school, you know, your teacher says you got a B, you thought you got an A. And you say to your teacher, well, I thought I didn't work good enough to get an A, but you gave me a B. And the good teacher will say, okay, this is how you got your B. And they go over the history. And the history may consist of four things, maybe more, but for the most part, it's four things. It's your homework, it's your classwork, it's your test, and it's your quiz. Those four things usually make up your grade, and that's your history. So over that grading period, that marking period, what happens is your test grades, your quiz grades, your homework, and your classwork, they will say this is what you did, and because something was stronger than others, that's why you got a B as opposed to an A. That's what you call your history. It's the same thing here. Your payment history is over time. It shows how often you paid, when you paid, if you paid, and the way you paid. Okay? And then negative information. What is negative information? Negative information is information on you that's derogatory, that helps bring your credit score down. And personal information is information about you. And so we talked about that. We also talked about who uses it and why. Why do they use it? They use it for, lenders use it to determine your credit worthy. Insurance companies use it sometimes to talk about calculated risk. Employers use it to determine your ethical behavior in your company risk. A government agency that definitely deals with finance may use it for financial status for government benefits. And maybe even state or child support and enforcement agencies may look at it and check that out. We talked about the three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. You can get information on all of these, okay? We talked about, you know, how you can get a copy of your report. Okay, not your score, but a lot of times your report. And you can go to each one of them. Okay? You can go to each one of them and get your credit report. You can go to each one of the credit bureaus and get a credit report. Okay? And you can get one each and every year. And you know what you can do is you can take each one of them and say, I get one this quarter, I get one next quarter, another one next quarter. So you don't have to get them all at the same time. So spread it out a little bit. So remember, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. We start talking about the FICO score, how the FICO score breaks down. Okay, that FICO score is a score that everybody, most lenders use, and they look at your score and they determine your creditworthiness, and it also has a great deal to do with if you can get something, if you do, whether or not the interest rate you're being charged and so forth. So that also has a direct bearing, a direct effect on if you can get something, and if you do get it, how much you actually pay for it. And it talks about the amount owed, and it's broken down, we call a pie chart. 30% goes to how much owed. 35% is your payment history. 15% is your credit history. 10% is new credit, and another 10% is the type of credit. What kind of credit, what kind of debt do you have? So you got 30% the amount that you owe, 35% payment history, 15% credit history, 10% new credit, and 10% types of credit. So we talked about that. So we just talked about that whole pie chart, but understanding how that is broken down in terms of them attempting to give you your credit score. Does it still matter? We talked about, does it still matter? For example, what percentage of that pie chart, what matters the most? So if you've had something within a purse, if you've got something current in the 12 months, that's 40%, 40% of your score. 13 months to 24 months, 30%. 25 months to 36 months, 20%. And anything above 37 months, 10%. What does that mean? It means the percentage of how much strength it has. So, for example, if you got something that's 5 years old and you have something that's 6 months old, and you have a choice of which one to pay, you pay the one that's 6 months old. Because right now, that has more value to your score than the one that's 5 years old. We're not suggesting that you don't pay the one that's 5 years old. We're saying to you, if you're in a situation where you only have enough to pay one or the other, we're telling you to pay the one, or we're suggesting to you to pay the one that's 6 months, because that one right now has the most value to helping you build and create a better credit score, as opposed to the one that's 5 years old. Again, we're not saying don't say it. It's not, don't pay it. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying, giving you an idea that if you're in a situation like that, what's best for your credit, and that's what we talked about. Let me also talk about what's not included in your score, things like your race, your religion, your nationality, your sex, your marital status, and whether or not you're a recipient of public assistance. So we talked about that, okay? And so that's a thing. And we also talked about things, what hurts your score, missing your payment, credit cards maxed out, closing credit cards, numerous inquiries. I just talked about that earlier, numerous new accounts, more revolving debt. Now, the difference between numerous inquiries and numerous new accounts is, you keep acquiring, even though you have, now you keep acquiring, you get new accounts. Now you have multiple new accounts open all over the place. But you also lost some points because you had to open them. You had to inquire in order to open them. So now you're losing points because you're inquiring. Remember I said the more you inquire, every time you acquire, whether you get approved or not, is not the issue. The issue is the more you inquire, the points start coming off your score. So you want to be careful. You want to make sure that you're asking and applying for things that you truly, truly need, as opposed to a lot of things that you truly, truly want. How do you improve your score? Pay consistently on time. Don't transfer balances frequently. Balance below 30% of your credit limit. Let me explain that real quick. Now, a lot of times I say 50% balance below. So let's assume you have a credit card and the limit is of $1,000. What we're saying is that you want to try to keep that limit or what you spend below 30%. So that balance of that below 30%. So meaning only spending about $300. So at the end of the month, as long as that, whether you pay it all off or not, if it's now, if you spent $300 in September, at the end of September you only paid $150, it's still now going into October, you still have less than 30% you owe. Which makes things look great when it comes down to your actual credit limit. So you want to make sure you keep that balance below 30%. At that point, if you only own $150, you're at 15%. Limit the number of inquiries. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. Every time you want something, I don't care if it's between a mortgage and car payments and Macy's or whatever it may be, a credit card, whatever it may be, you want to make sure it's limited, okay? You don't want to keep doing it. And pay off credit cards. Pay them off if you can. And that's some of the things we talked about. Correcting inaccuracies. We talked about that as well. How do we correct inaccuracies? Meaning what happens when we see our credit report, we look at it, and we know that there's things on there that shouldn't be there. What do we need to do? And one of the things we need to do, we need to write a letter. And a lot of times they want that letter to be 100 words or less. You want to send that letter in any correspondence, any written correspondence, via certified mail. And keep copies of everything. So you want to send them a letter by certified mail, keep copies of it, and you want that letter to be under 100 words. because they don't want a book. They're not going to read it. 100 words tell me exactly what it is. I see this is on my account. It shouldn't be there. I paid it off 2 years ago. Here's a receipt for it. Here's a letter from them stating that it was paid off, and that's all you have. And then they will review it, look at it, and hopefully clear it up for you. And that's what we want to make sure that we talked about, that we consistently talked about. But it's important to understand what your three credit bureaus are. Okay, we talked about Experian, we talked about Equifax, and we talked about TransUnion. So there it is. So that's just a quick overview of the credit repair. I'm going to have Josh back on. I'm going to have a few other people back on to talk about that because I think that's vital. And that's going to be a great issue and a great topic. And we're going to probably be doing that once or twice a quarter as well because that's another topic that I think we need to really talk about. Then we're going to move on to budgeting. But I'm going to take a few more minutes again, take a few minutes and do a quick commercial. This is Derek T. Phillips on The Poet Without Limits Radio.
Come on, y'all ready for this one? Listen.
Because of rage,
yeah.
We are both praise to you. And the rest
of the
language that can be said.
Sometimes it gets heavy.
About what we have been talking about in August and half of July and some of the things that we're going to continue to talk about this last quarter of the year. Again, I believe it's very important. I know young men and women are starting to prepare to go to school. I know a lot of times parents are not as familiar with the process of helping their kids go to school. And so what we want to do is continue to give some information that if they're not listening, if you're listening, then you can pass it on to them. They can always contact me. Again, I'm Derek T. Bell, Sr., President of the Foundation for Financial Incorporated, www.f4ff.net, financial fitness at f4ff.net, area code 856-577-2903. So all my information, you can also get my book, Are You Making a Living or Making a Life? You can get that online, or you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, get that online as well if you want to get the book that way. So, again, we talked a little bit about college planning. We talked a little about credit repairs. And now I'm going to go right into budget, because we believe, again, we continue to believe that it's a lack of people not budgeting, managing their money properly, and it starts with the budget. And, again, we're just going to start getting into all of these things. We're going to be getting into financial planning. We're going to bring in life insurance agent, accountants, CPAs, everybody that's just going to help us through this, all these professionals that I believe is going to help us go through all of these things, that's because you'll be able to take this information, apply it to your life, show it to other people, and then hopefully make not only your personal life, but hopefully your business, if you have a business, thrive. So we're going to get to a budget, the benefits of a budget. What are the benefits of a budget? One is to know what's going on with your finance. Two, financial control and discipline. Three, to identify your spending patterns. And four, understand that you have extra money in cash flow. If you have extra money, and what the cash flows are, you know, what's the arrow? What's the way you can kind of prepare a budget? Keep track of your daily spending. Determine your monthly income and your expenses. Decrease spending, increase income. There's only two things that happen. Okay, you got a budget. Only two things that happen. You can increase your income or decrease your expenses. And so we want to make sure that, obviously, if your expenses exceed your income, then those are the only two things you can do. Increase your income or decrease your expenses. So we want to make sure if you understand that when you have a budget, you'll know that. Sometimes people have a budget or their income exceeds their expenses. And you say, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it does. Sometimes if your income exceeds your expenses, yet you don't see where that excess of money is going, you have no idea of why or where it's going, then that means you need to start tracking your spending. And the budget helps you to do that. Start tracking your spending, have a better understanding of where your money's going. And you can do that on a weekly or biweekly basis. 2 weeks in a row, do it. It's long and it's tedious, but it's something that you can do that will help you to have a better understanding why, even though my income does exceed my expenses, I'm doing a good job or I'm making an adequate amount of money, but for some reason I'm not seeing the difference. Okay, my expenses are here, but I don't see that excess money and what's going on. Where am I spending the other money and why? That's what we want to make sure, that tracking your spending helps you do that. It helps you do that a great deal, okay? And then having an understanding of, you know, how do I increase the cash flow? You know, if you have a little pyramid right there in front of you, and, you know, at the top of that pyramid is the smaller part, but the bottom part of the pyramid is the bigger part. That's the base. That's what holds the pyramid together or keeps the pyramid standing. And in the bottom of that part, the third bottom of that part is what you need. That's what's needed. And then in the middle, you get to need some needs and wants. And then that little small part at the top, that tip there, is the want. But that wants part is the smaller part, and it's up top. Because most people need to understand, need to handle what's needed first, take care of your needs. Then you get a little opportunity if you handle your needs. Then you get an opportunity to get some of the wants. And then once you master all that, then you get in a better position, because then you know to take care of your needs first, then you can get to your wants. And I think that once you understand it and you're following a consistent budget, a consistent monthly budget, and that budget has to be tangible. What I mean by tangible, it has to be somewhere you can see, something you can touch, something you can use, something that's applicable, something that you're doing and using on a monthly basis. That then brings it to life, and that's what we want you to do, okay? Sometimes there's a budget guideline. There's a budget guideline. Meaning that, you know, 100% of your money, where should it go? How should it be distributed? And usually about 35% is into housing. 20% is usually into transportation. 15% is into debt. 10% is to saving. And the last 20% is the others. Others could be entertainment, food, things of that nature. So you need to make sure that it's in the right place. So if you're making $1,000 a month, again, I'm using $1,000 because it's easier for me. But if you're making $1,000 a month, $350 should go to housing. Now, whether you own it, rent, doesn't make a difference what you're doing, that's where it should go. But remember that housing also could be going for that rent or mortgage, but also could be going for rent or mortgage, but also could be going to utilities and things of that nature as well. Or in the other, that 20% other, some of that can come, some of your utilities can come out of the other. Because you still need to eat, maybe you want to have some entertainment. So all that comes out of the other. Everything else is pretty much allocated, 20% transportation. That's whether or not you own a vehicle, meaning you're paying car insurance or paying a car payment, or you're just using public transportation. So 35% housing, 20% transportation, 15% debt, 10% savings, and 20% others. And then stick to your budget. Okay, be determined. Exercise willpower. Be prepared to compromise. Make a list and avoid impulse buying. You know, a lot of times people like to go out, they see things they want, they just buy it. Avoid just, you know, retail therapy, meaning that you just got to go out and you got to buy it, Comparison shop. You know, do that. Good people do that. They say, okay, this cost, this is what this cost over here. Let me check something else first to make sure. That's what makes things great, because you can compare and you don't have to buy it unless it's absolutely necessary or you're in a position where that's the only place you can get it at that particular time. But usually, if you take your time, you have an opportunity to shop around and get a better deal and a better price. Okay, and get yourself around. Allow yourself some dollars to say, hey, look, I'll use this. I'll spend. I can impulse and do anything I want to do with this amount, but it doesn't affect where I'm at. Why do you want to save? Okay, in that budget? Because it achieves financial security. Okay, money you save now will save you later, probably. Okay, and it helps you to achieve your financial goals. All of these things fit within a budget to allow you, because even in that budget, you should be allocating for a savings. You should be allocating for savings. You should not just be, the budget will allow you to save, allow you to understand what you're doing, allow you to do the things you need. That's vital. It's vital and it's important, okay? And paying yourself first as well. See, some of these things you won't see if you don't have the proper budget, because a proper budget will allocate for saving, will allocate for paying yourself first. As I said earlier, giving yourself a round. Those things are important. Those things are important. And as you do those things, as you continue to move forward with that, you'll understand why important that budget, how important that budget is. Because, again, let me say something to you. But it's all about we having an understanding who has influences over our budget. And that's why it's important, the budget. Because sometimes the budget will allow us to see who has the influence over us, whether it be family, whether it be your mood and your emotion, whether it be society, whether it be your gender or race. These are things that come into play. What do I mean by your family? You know what I mean by it. Maybe sometimes your relatives influences you by what they have, what they do, and because you see them have things where they have a house, car, going on great vacations, you want to do that. That influences you. That influences you. Gender, race, but sometimes they talk about men not being able to handle money as well as women. Sometimes that falls into that category if you're a man, and so sometimes you don't handle it. Or sometimes they say women spend more. Meaning they're impulse buyers, as opposed to men just not being great managers of money. Sometimes women become more and more impulse buyers, spenders, and things of that nature. Your mood and emotion. Some people, when they're angry, they get down, they splurge, they spend. They spend money. They go out and they shop, do things of that nature. So you need to understand who you are. Society. What do we mean about society? What do we feel? What do we think? Promotion. Okay, things of that nature. They're always trying to convince us to tell us to buy. They want us to buy. That's their job. When watching TV, we're watching ourselves, sell everything. Food to cars. From cars to home. From homes to security. From security to dogs. They want to buy everything. And they do have a great influence on who we are and what we how we should talk. And that's why it's important to have a budget. What a budget allows you to put those things in place. And as you put those things in place, your financial income, then it allows you to move forward, and then you have control, as opposed to something else, someone else having control over. And again, that's just a quick review and overview. And then we talked a little bit about college planning. We talked a little about credit repair. And now we just talked a little about budgeting. Those are the three topics. We talked about actual savings, how the best way to save. We talked about mortgage lending. And we're going to continue to talk about this thing and bring on professionals. Because as I said, just like I talked about in my first book, changing your condition, not your position. About bringing on, having your team, your financial team. And I want everyone to hear this and understand it. It's truly about having your financial team. Because you can listen to my show, you can read my books, you can listen to other shows, read other books, and what happens is you're still, at the end of the day, going to need to have professionals in your life that can help you situations that you're not familiar with. Buying a home, buying a car, buying life insurance, saving for retirement, paying tax, repairing credit. All of these things require some kind of profession. Now, I'm not saying that you don't know it, that you don't know how to get from A to B. I'm saying these people are there to help you. If you might help you connect the dots. Connecting the dots is where you want to be. Because those are their professions. What most of them do, what all of them do, every single day. And again, the dollars you spend now will probably save you thousands later on. So don't let a dime hold up a dollar. Okay, don't allow a little bit of money keep you from a lot of money. Allow yourself, put yourself, give yourself a work with people, work with professionals. That's what you're going to hear from. That's what you're going to hear from us here on Financial Fitness with Derek Stokes Senior. That's what we're going to do. We're going to continue to bring professional people that will give you the direction, give you the help, give you the guide, give you the information to move forward. This last quarter, I want you to join us. We're going to be on from 8 to 10 p.m. every Sunday evening. And like I said, at least two Sundays out of a month, we're going to have other professionals on helping us get through that evening with some vital, strong information that we know that will continue to help you every single day. So I'm going to give you a little information about what's going on with me in the next month. In October 8th, we're going to be at Media Books in Claymont, Delaware, with the Finance, Fitness, and Health Seminar. That's going to be from 3 to 7. I think that's 2099A, Philadelphia Pike in Claymont, Delaware. Again, that's Media Books, Saturday, October the 8th, for the Finance, Fitness, and Health Seminar, 3 to 7 p.m. at 2099A, Philadelphia Pike. Also, we're going to be continuing to move forward. So look at my website at www.f4ff.net to keep a look at my calendar, see where I'm going to be, the things we're going to be doing. We're going to continue to do things in the Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania area, or the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey area. We can continue to do a lot of things in those areas, and we're very, very, very excited about the things we're doing. And that's just one of the big things that's happening on October the 8th at Media Books. And I will continue to keep you abreast of what's going on next week. I'll tell you what else is happening and how we're doing things. Also give you an idea. So look on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, my website for my upcoming guests. And so I'll give you, I have a schedule of the guests that will be coming on for the rest of the month and some of the topics that we'll be discussing and all those kind of things. So I'm really excited about the last quarter, even though September is not a part of the last quarter. These last four months are going to be exciting, and we're going to have some great people, and we're just looking forward to, we really are looking forward to the things that we can do. And again, you're on Financial Fitness with Derek T. Phillips Sr., Poets Without Limits Radio. So make sure, if you need to contact me, you can reach me at www.f4ff.net, financialfitness@f4ff.net, area code 856-577-2903. Get my new book, Are You Making a Living or Making a Life? Again, this is Financial Fitness with Derek T. Phillips Sr. on the Poets Without Limits Radio. You have a great holiday weekend. I will see you and talk to you next weekend.